we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. All right, you guys. I took January off from podcasting, which means that I did not air two episodes since this is a biweekly show. And that was a first for me in all of the years of podcasting, but I really, really needed it. And I will share more about why in my next episode. I don't want to give away too much yet, but a big life change, big announcement. And I'll be sharing that after this solo episode about my 24 reflections from 2024. Thank you, though, for your grace and just letting me take that sacred pause. And I'm sure most of y'all needed it as well in your own lives. I think January was a rough month for a lot of people. And I think there's something about the winter in January where we really want to hibernate and reset. And I've never really resonated with January 1st being New Year's. It feels more for me, the spring feels like the time to like set goals and, you know, start anew and things like that. January has never felt like that for me. January has always felt like more of a recoup and an internal reset. And so that's really what I felt this January. And I needed to have that hibernation. But again, I'll share more about that in the next solo cast. This solo cast is me sharing my reflections from 2024. And it was definitely a big year of pivots and plot twists. It was a year of deep love. It was lots of unexpected shifts, some hard truths, and some moments that absolutely cracked me even more open. I want to share these reflections with you, not as some, you know, neatly wrapped wisdom from the mountaintop, which I've never made it to, but as an offering that I hope encourages you in your own journey. Because if you moved through big things this last year also, maybe you'll see yourself in some of these reflections, and maybe it'll remind you that you're not alone in this wild, beautiful, sometimes gut-wrenching experience of being human. All right, so here are my biggest reflections from 2024. The first one is, how good can it get? For a long time, I ended my prayers with this or something better. For me, it was a way of surrendering my desires to God, knowing that ultimately I just wanted His will for my life. So if I was praying for something, but it wasn't in alignment with His will and He had something better, then I'd rather that. But this past year, something shifted in how I felt about that sentence, and I started praying instead, God, please show me how good it can get. And often I would specifically say that prayer about my parenting, my love life, and my finances. God, please show me how good it can get. At first, I felt this quiet knowing. This was maybe in like February of last year when I started to pray this. And I had this like quiet knowing that the areas that I knew weren't really good were going to fall away. And that made me really nervous because change can be hard and expansion can be uncomfortable. But I kept praying it anyway, because just like before, just like always, I trusted that whatever God had for me was the best. And whatever that is how good it can get. And then some of those things did fall away pretty quickly after I began that prayer. But in their place, great came. And now I still say that prayer without the nervousness, actually, not because I never feel stretched or uncertain, but because I know I'm here for the process. And that prayer is actually a reminder of that. And I truly trust God to show me how good it can get. So I invite you to say this prayer and notice what comes up. What feels scary or exciting about it? What parts of your life does it bring either of those emotions to? And you may notice where there's not alignment to your truest desires. I came across a quote by Miriam Hazna that speaks to this so beautifully. She says, "The truth is, our minds can't even imagine or comprehend the highest possible outcome. This is why my prayer has always been, I want whatever God wants for me. This allows the divine to pour into me without being limited by my imagination." This takes so much of the manifestation pressure off and just allows us to surrender to God, trusting that the desires placed in our hearts are divinely inspired. And this prayer doesn't just cover our desires, it invites in the best versions of them. So let's lean into trust and let's see just how good it can get. Okay, lesson two, or reflection two, clarity comes in calm. This might seem obvious, but it wasn't for me actually until I experienced it for myself. So now that I'm in a calm relationship, I can see my patterns so much more clearly because I'm not constantly in fight or flight. In past relationships, everything was really intense, especially the conflict. And that intensity kept my nervous system in overdrive. And when you're just trying to stay regulated, it's nearly impossible to step back and truly see yourself. No relationship is perfect. And I still find myself in fight or flight at times. But in this partnership, things don't escalate regularly to the point where I lose my ability to reflect. And I can actually witness how I contribute to what's unfolding rather than just reacting to it. I'm still very much a work in progress in this. And I know that relationships are the biggest work that we can do. For a long time, though, I think I believed that the most growth happened in relationship through conflict. And yes, conflict can be a portal for transformation when the dynamic is safe. But now I no longer believe that healing requires difficult conflict and intensity. And I no longer believe that more work gets done just because there's more conflict. Real healing, I believe now, happens in the space where we can actually see ourselves. And for me, that clarity has only come through calm. Reflection number three, teaching my nervous system to receive more good. So I've been familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza's work for a long time. Reading his books, I highly recommend them. I believe the first one is You Are the Placebo, and which is a really great book. One of my favorites is Becoming Supernatural. He's got a handful of them, but I've read multiple of his books and watched his show on Gaia, and I've been doing his meditations for a while now. Really want to go to one of his retreats. And then I've also studied the tantric approach to his type of work through Layla Martin. And recently, I felt on a deeper level just how important it is to teach my nervous system that it can experience more good, which is really like what I began to learn through them. But I've been feeling it on even a deeper level because we expand our capacity for good by actually allowing ourselves to feel the good, whether that's through practices like sex magic that I learned through that tantra program, or through Dispenza meditations, or by confronting our upper limits, breathing through them, and choosing a new experience in that moment. In meditation or pleasure states, this looks like fully immersing myself in the vision of what I desire traveling to another country, having abundance in my bank account, being in a deeply loving and safe partnership, whatever the desire is, I completely immerse myself in it. So I'm not just thinking about it. I'm fully embodying it in my nervous system. I bring it into all five of my senses. What would it taste like? What would it smell like? What would it feel like? And I hold that in my elevated state of either meditation or pleasure. And I let my nervous system bathe in the experience so that it begins to recognize it as safe, as normal, and as possible. And the more I do this, the more I allow those things into my life. And yet, despite all the work I've done, I still notice my nervous system bracing it at times. In my relationship now, if I go to rest and my partner walks into the room, my instinct is to jolt up, like my nervous system jolts, and I want to like jump up to prove that I'm doing something. I'm not just laying around, because I've been in relationships where rest was not safe, where leaving dishes in the sink while caring for a newborn even meant that they'd be thrown away, where napping meant that I'd be cussed out and belittled. And so I bring this example up because if I continued in this response where my nervous system gets jolted and I, you know, jump up, that would keep my nervous system holding that as its reality, that it's not safe to rest, even in my own home. So in this example, how I expand it is when I feel the jolt, I remind myself that I'm with a partner that doesn't punish me or belittle me, and that actually wants me to rest if I'm tired, and that it's safe to do so. And then I lay back down, holding that as my truth. And the more I rewire that into my system, the more my nervous system will know that as the current truth, that I am safe, that I can receive good without the fear. That expansion isn't something to brace against. It's something that I can relax into. And that allows me to enjoy it all even more. Reflection number four, notice who you can be funny around. So I talked about this in my episode with Bryn Daler, and I know I'm referencing my relationship a lot. That won't be the case in all of these lessons, but honestly, I've learned so much through it. I noticed something strange when I looked back at my past relationships. I was never the funny one, and it's not because I'm not funny, but because I was hyper aware of what might upset them, constantly walking on eggshells and making sure I didn't say the wrong thing. There was no room to just be, to be playful, to be goofy, to let my humor come through. But in this relationship, where I really feel fully accepted and free to be myself, I'm actually quite hilarious, and it keeps us laughing. And it made me realize how much humor is tied to emotional safety. And that realization led me to reflect on my friendships as well and ask who brings out that side of me. And I noticed it's always the people who accept me exactly as I am, no matter how I show up. And that doesn't mean that, That doesn't mean that every great connection has to be filled with laughter. Some friendships bring out our philosophical side. Some bring out our intellectual depth. Some bring out our deeper spirituality. And all of these dynamics have their own magic. But for me, humor has become a powerful indicator of noticing where I feel extra safe. So if this resonates, I invite you to notice, who do you feel free to be your silly, funny self around? Because that laughter can become even more healing medicine when you take notice of that. Reflection number five, they say no one is coming to save you, but I don't believe that. And I do understand what the saying means. I understand that you have to do your own work. You have to learn how to hold yourself, how to choose yourself, how to stand back up when life knocks you down. But I also know this. We do save each other. Others help us back up. My best friend, Tom, has saved me. I likely would have gone through with my suicidal thoughts in my 20s had it not been for the light that he was in my life. Natasha, Paige, Stephanie, I could go on. They've all saved me in every breakup and in every parenting struggle, reminding me of my worth, my power, my ability. None of them carried my burdens for me or did my inner work, but them being there when I couldn't hold it all alone, by lifting some of the weight, by reminding me who I am when I forget, by loving me when I didn't feel lovable, it saved me. And we were never meant to do this alone. Most trauma happens in relationship, and so the deepest healing happens in relationship, not in isolation. It happens in the hands that catch you, in the voices that call you back to yourself, in the love that refuses to let you disappear. Of course, we have to be willing. We have to open. We have to let ourselves be saved. But someone is coming for you, and they always have been. Reflection number 6. When we save each other, we are God's love personified. So when we show up for each other, when we offer love, provision, or support, we become the embodiment of God's love. We are his hands and his feet in this world. So when we accept it in another, we are loving the God showing up in the person in and through them. And just as important as giving that love is the ability to receive it. It reminds me of that old parable. Noah told this parable in Nobody Wants This. It's like my favorite show ever. So it reminds me of that parable, though. He talked about how there was this man stranded on his rooftop in a flood, and a boat comes by, and then a helicopter, and then another rescue team, but he refuses them all, saying, "Oh no, go on, God will save me." And then when he drowns and he meets God, he asks God, "Why didn't you save me?" And God says, "I sent you a boat. I sent you a helicopter. I sent you help. You just didn't accept it." So how often do we do the same? How often do we overlook the ways God is showing up through the people around us? How often do we pray for God's help, but then when it shows up in a person, we don't receive it? So when your partner provides for you, that is God's provision through him. And it's an invitation to honor it more and to cherish it more, not just with gratitude for our partner, but with gratitude for God through our partner. When your loved ones support you, care for you, or show up in your hardest moments, allow yourself to receive it fully, knowing that God moves through people. Love is the divine in action. So let's let the people in our lives be his hands and his feet. Let them save us when we need saving, and trust that in doing so, we are witnessing God's love in its most tangible form, his people. All right, reflection 7, consent is always sexy. So to me, consent isn't just sexy, it's healing. No matter a woman's history, no matter her level of trauma, being entered with reverence transforms intimacy into something sacred. A woman's body is a temple. To recognize it as such, to pause and to honor, creates an entirely different experience. Simply saying, "May I," or "Do you want me inside you," isn't just about permission. It's about devotion. It tells her that you see her, that you cherish her, that you hold her body in holy reverence. And in that moment, her body responds with even more openness, with softness, with the deep knowing that she is safe, she's protected, and she's cared for. This doesn't mean desire has to slow down or that you can't shift into a different mode right after. But that sacred pause, that moment of recognition of the sacredness of her body, it changes everything. for a deeper dive into that, you can listen to my episode with G.S. Youngblood and reflection 8. Consent is essential for healing. So to add on to reflection 7, consent isn't just something we give or receive from another or in relationship. It's something we must practice with ourselves. Without it, even the most well-intentioned healing work can become re-traumatizing instead of restorative. If we constantly push ourselves through practices, through therapies or rituals without tuning into our bodies, without asking, is this a yes for me right now? We aren't actually creating the safety required for true healing. Instead, we risk reinforcing the very patterns of violation or force that we're trying to unwind because we're not creating the safety that our body needs to feel in order to heal. And it actually keeps us in the loop of trauma. I recently heard a story about a woman in a sexuality program who was told to push past the pain. But no one stopped to ask whether her body felt safe to do so. There was no yes to the practice, only pressure. And while growth often requires us to stretch beyond our comfort zones, there's a difference between expanding our capacity and ignoring our body's wisdom. This isn't about avoiding discomfort or quitting when resistance shows up. It's about discernment. It's about learning to ask, do I feel a true yes in my body to go deeper right now? Is this expansion or is this force? Because real healing doesn't come from pushing through. It comes from honoring the body's timing, its boundaries, and its innate intelligence. Reflection number 9, no time is ever wasted. So there have been moments, especially as a mother, when I've wished I had built a more structured career earlier in life, something that would have given me greater financial security and less stress when it comes to providing for my children. And when I sit in that thought for too long, it's easy to spiral into regret. Analyzing the choices I made in my 20s, you know, I spent that decade as a ring girl, a model, solo backpacking around the world and pursuing acting, none of which set me up with a traditional safety net. But when I drop out of my head and into my heart, I know that time wasn't wasted. It was rich. It was full. And it shaped me into who I am today. And I wouldn't trade it. My 30s were spent raising two beautiful kids and building a podcast that has given me the most incredible, soul-nourishing conversations. And I haven't built a livable income from it, but I've built something that matters. My podcast has been both my therapy and I hope a space of impact for you. And even if it hasn't become a massive financial success, I wouldn't trade it either. I may not have built a solid career in my 30s, but I built something even more precious to me, a heart full of memories with my kids. They didn't have to grow up in daycare, which was always a goal of mine. And I got to be the one with them during those tender formative years. And no title or paycheck could ever replace that for me. My 30s may not look impressive on paper, but they are etched into my heart in a way no resume could ever capture for me. So nothing we've lived, nothing we've poured our energy into is ever wasted. Every season has its purpose, even if it didn't give us what we thought it would. And the path we walked was the one we were meant to walk. Reflection number 10, you cannot get it wrong. So the shamans say you can't get it wrong, and I believe that. When it comes to our spiritual journeys, the relationships we choose, the paths we walk, there is no single perfect way. There's not necessarily a straight path in life. There's no map that guarantees we'll avoid heartache or missteps. There's no blueprint that ensures a smooth ride. But life isn't meant to be a straight path. It's meant to be experienced fully, deeply, wholly. That's why we came here. And we often get caught up in the idea that we have to make the right choice, choosing the right partner, the right career, the right timing. But I feel that the real lesson is that there is no right or wrong. There's just your way, your path. And every twist and every so-called detour or bump in the road, every season of loss or uncertainty is still leading us all exactly where we're meant to go. And I also feel that all paths lead home, especially when we are in wholehearted pursuit of truth and of love and of growth. The universe is never working against us. It's always working with us, even when we can't see it. So we just have to trust that we're held and that we are learning what we need to learn, and that no matter how winding or confusing the road may seem, we're always on our way. Reflection number 11, grief as a portal to love. So grief is heavy. It cracks us open in ways we never asked for. But within that breaking open, there are gifts, gifts that we may not have received otherwise. Last year, in the depths of my own grief, I had never felt more held by my girlfriends. Their love wrapped around me in a way that reminded me of something I've always known but needed to feel again. We save each other. Sisterhood is not just a word, it's a lifeline. The way that they showed up for me, the way they loved me through it, it was so profound that it shifted something in me. It proved to me, without a doubt, that I am never truly alone. And that realization strengthened me in a way nothing else has. And feeling their love for me actually made me love myself more in my decisions. And also grief, from what I've come to understand, is always in direct proportion to love. So the deeper the love, the deeper the grief. And so when we find ourselves swallowed by sorrow, maybe we can also feel a kind of pride or gratitude in ourselves, because it means we also dare to love that big and that deeply. What a gift to be able to feel something so real, so vast, that the absence of it actually aches. And the depth of our sorrow, I feel, mirrors the depth of our connection. And I've learned that you can't selectively numb emotions. If you numb yourself to grief, you also dull your capacity to feel joy, love, and awe. We don't get to pick and choose. It's either a life of muted emotions or one where we feel it all deeply, fully, unapologetically. And not all love leads to heartbreak, but sometimes it's the very path that leads us to that invincible love, the kind that endures, grows, and transforms us. And I'd rather feel it all than miss out on the richness of all of that. And if I had the power to lessen my grief, but knew it would also lessen my capacity for love, I would not take the trade, because grief and love are inseparable. And feeling grief means we opened our hearts fully, that we said yes to life and all of its beauty and all of its risk. And if that's part of living fully, I'll do it every time. Reflection number 12, your thoughts and emotions shape your reality. So this is, you know, what I've learned basically from Joe Dispenza all of these years, but it really hit home this last year even more. And it's that everything is energy, and we are constantly broadcasting our own frequency into the world through our thoughts and through our emotions. And science confirms what ancient wisdom has always known, that our heart and our mind generate an electromagnetic field that extends beyond our bodies, influencing not just our personal state, but the reality that we experience. So our mind shapes our environment, even though it often feels like it's the other way around. But when we shift our thoughts, our emotions follow, and that shift begins altering the very field that we emit, meaning it completely alters our life. And because the world responds to energy and to resonance, and so our external reality rearranges itself to match our internal state, so within, so without. And so I've seen this truth play out in my own life, especially this last year, because for years I had a deep, deep desire in partnership to feel protected and provided for and held in a way that let my feminine energy completely soften. But for so long, I wavered in fully standing in that desire because a part of me questioned if it was too much to ask for from a partner, if I was asking for something that, I don't know, was outdated or that I couldn't have. But when I finally decided, no, this is my truth. This is what I'm worthy of. This is what I really desire. I didn't just think it. I felt it, like in those practices I spoke of in a previous reflection. And I let that certainty settle into my body, into my heart. And that shift was like a tuning fork, because once I embodied that belief, my external world reflected it. And that's when I called in a partner who embodies the provider, protector energy, who holds me and lets me be in my feminine and is everything I had always really known that I needed. And that's not just magic. It's also physics. It's the law of resonance. The mind is a creator. So if we change our minds, the evidence will appear. I think it's just, Dr. Joe Dispenza says, change your mind, change your life. So hold the frequency of what we desire and the world will move to meet us there. All right. So that's my first 12 reflections. I'm splitting this into two episodes. I'll do the next 12 reflections on part two of the solo cast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And I hope that you are coming out of your hibernation of January, if you had one as well, feeling really excited for 2025 and fully capable. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you throughout this year. Really excited for my next few episodes, for my big announcement and the episodes to follow. And yeah, don't forget to be a light.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.